Good morning. I want to extend a welcome to everyone this morning again. It's good to see David and Ida with us this morning. I didn't know you were going to be here, but we're proud you're here. Also for Hope, it's good to have you back again. And Neil and Gail, we're glad to have you here too. I would invite your attention this morning to Matthew 5 again. I have impressed with Jesus' words here in his teaching and the way it relates to even to us or relates to us today. His teaching to the crowd there on the mountainside, or on the plain, wherever, that because he was on the mountain and the people below him, that he was talking to, these words were relevant to them. They're relevant for us now. If you would, I'd like to read 17 to 20 here to start with. It says, Jesus said, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, or truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." You shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Think not that I am come to destroy the law. I don't know what the context was that he was saying that, except I think it was a pretext to the rest of the chapter. The law and the prophets. The law and the prophets. You know what? I want to read Matthew 22:37-40 right now. And this is when a certain Pharisee was asking Jesus, which is the greatest, or the Pharisee was asking him a question, and he asked him, "Which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and greatest great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So Jesus was prioritizing these. And that he was referencing Deuteronomy 6, where it says the same thing: "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might." Jesus didn't come to change that. And he said, "I came to fulfill that." And to fulfill that, he was coming to expand that, actually. Or in his fulfillment, he was expanding that. What did he mean, "except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees"? We have our own word picture our own or a mental picture of what the scribes and Pharisees were like. And whether it's true or not, it's what we have in our minds. But the Pharisees were a very detailed people. And they had the law. They would interpret the law at face value. If it said don't kill, they wouldn't kill, but they would not kill. That's how they would do it. They would not kill. If it said don't commit adultery, then they don't commit adultery. But they had, like we do today, they had ways to manipulate some of this sometimes. And they were a little bit like Balaam. Balaam was a man who knew what God said, and he wanted to do something different, but he couldn't because he promised not to. But he manipulated things as well. He had that spirit of, I want to, but I can't. And sometimes I think the scribes and Pharisees had that spirit, and I think we can have that spirit today. That I want to, but I can't because I'm in a box or I'm bound by something. I'd like to read Exodus 20, if you could turn to that. Exodus 20. School children, do you know what Exodus 20 is? What we find there? Just say if you know it. That's right, the Ten Commandments. Do you think Jesus knew what the Ten Commandments were? Yeah, I think he did. I think Jesus knew. Jesus was very, very well versed in the whole law and prophets here. So I'm just going to read these here. It says, and God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt, and out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house or anything else of your neighbor's. So those are the commandments that God gave to Moses. And Jesus was saying that that those would not pass away until they're fulfilled. Completed. Fulfilled has the thought of to put into effect, to execute, to meet the requirements, to measure up to, or to complete. So, when you think of the Ten Commandments, school children, again, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Just pop one off.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill. Okay. Thou shalt not kill. I think that's one of the first ones that came to Jesus' mind too here. So let's read again Matthew 5 and 17. Not 17, sorry, verse 21. It says, "Ye have heard it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." He's expanding this commandment here. The scribes and the Pharisees said, Thou shalt not kill. If you kill, then you're in danger of being judged. You're in danger of going to court and make a judgment on you. And the judgment could cost you your life. You could be acquitted or something in between. But Jesus said, no, it's not just taking a club and killing somebody. That's not what it is. He said it goes more than just the act. It starts in the mind. It starts in the heart. It's who you are. Whoso is angry with his brother. And it says here it says, whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause. Have you ever been angry with somebody for more than one day? I have. In Ephesians it says, be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. In other words, as human beings with the emotional makeup that we have, it's fairly normal. It's natural for us to be angry. If something happens, your blood pressure rises, there's something inside of you. And it's an emotion. It's somewhat of a natural response. But what do we do with that response? That's what we have a choice on. What do we do with that response? Do we feed it? Feed that anger and let it grow? And tomorrow we're more angry than we were today? And the next week we're even more angry? That response is a choice that we have. And if we don't clear it out and make it right, it's easy to say that, but when we're in some of those situations, it's not easy. So whoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. And the judgment switches from being a judgment of a court to a judgment between God and man. That's a difference. That's one difference between earthly kingdom and a heavenly kingdom, is that the judges are different. Whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. Raca is a term that just is a very belittling term. Just if you belittle somebody and tell them, well, Raca just simply means empty-headed or fool or stupid, or which, I mean, yeah, empty-headed. It's in anger that you're putting somebody else down and hurting them. When you do that, that's an action that you commit against somebody. Raca, that's a word. It's not an actual physical action, but it's a word, it's an actual action that you commit against somebody rather than an emotion. And whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Again, the judge, it's not the court of the Jewish court or the local court. And it's still an action against somebody else, but it's the anger in the heart, anger that's coming forth. And in 1 John it says, whoso hateth his brother is a murderer. That's not an action, that's an attitude. In relation to this verse, in verse 22 here, it talks about belittling somebody. There's an example in the Old Testament of somebody that belittled someone. And maybe it was with cause, and maybe it wasn't with cause. And I don't know if it was the action itself or if it was all connected with other things. But in 2 Samuel 6:20, when David returned from... When David was leading a procession of bringing the ark from Obed's house to the temple or tabernacle, he was, maybe you could say he got carried away, or the king, but he was all excited and he was jumping and shouting, and Michal, his wife, saw him, and it says she despised him in her heart. She despised him in her heart, and then in verse 20 of 2 Samuel, she said, it says, David returned to bless his household, his own household, and Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, sarcastically, how glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids of his servants as one of the vain fellows. And David goes on to respond to that. But in her heart, she despised him, and then she talks to him about that. But do we tend to despise people sometimes in our heart and build a case against them? And they may not have done anything to us personally, but maybe their actions hit us wrong. And so we think negatively about them and build a case in our mind, and then it rubs us, and then we would maybe not call it anger, but it wouldn't take much for them to make us angry. And then they may not understand why. But that also is a choice that I have power of in my own heart. Maybe you don't ever face that. I face that already. We say somebody rubs us the wrong way. Well, why do they rub us the wrong way? Well, maybe it could be anything. It could be a variety of reasons. But it starts in the heart, and it can progress to words, and then it can go on to actions. Those thoughts have any bearing on our standing with God? Do those thoughts have any bearing on us? In verse 23, it says, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, or if you come to worship God, or you come to sacrifice, and on the way, or at the altar, you remember that somebody has something against you, or you could say that you have somebody against, something against them. Either way, leave there your gift before the altar and go thy way. First, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift." This gift was in, there was a sacrifice that they could make for atonement. I don't understand all the sacrifices, but one of the sacrifices that they could make was an atonement for sin. And they'd take, for an average person of moderate means, they would take two sheep, two firstborn, healthy, unblemished sheep, and they'd take them to the priest as a sacrifice. And then the priest would sacrifice it, and it was an atonement for sin. It was a free will offering, but also an atonement for sin. And if there was some friction between people, Jesus is saying, if you're doing this, make sure you take care of the friction between each other before you offer the gift. In 25, agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, or while you have contact with him. Try to make peace while you can, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out from there till you have paid the uttermost farthing. In other words, be a peacemaker. Just do what you can to make peace, even aside from the fact of what it costs you. Just make, I mean, even aside from the fact of the relationship with God and you, it can physically cost you money if you, or physically cost you something if you don't make peace. Make peace. Anger is some other things on anger, and this is something that, from a Pharisee's mindset, a Pharisee could ask this question. And we can ask this as well. But how angry can I be and God still overlooks it? Is there a gray area there? And it comes back to this thing of thou shalt not kill, but anything under that is in this gray area. That's a thinking that these lawyers would think of. How angry can I be and still be in right standing with God? Or how angry can I be and God still accepts this and doesn't count it as sin? Also, a good rule to follow is if we have something there, make it right before the sun goes down. Don't let it fester. How do we deal with it? And maybe as children, we learned some of these habits from when we were young. Maybe anger is a habit that we have. I could say a habit. Maybe we could say dealing with anger is a habit. Because I think there is ways that we can work, can overcome that. I know for me, it's a struggle to, or has been a struggle in the past. It's still a struggle. Of anger, of displaying anger. Displaying anger is damaging to young children, can be. Or it's damaging to anybody, but especially those that we are responsible for. And we tend to hurt those the most that are closest to us, simply because they know us best, and it's harder to hide that. But just for dads and moms, it can be an ongoing thing for us to work with. But if, aside from working with it, be quick to apologize and make it right. Because anger can become, unchecked anger can become and a generational thing. It can go on and on and on. And some generations it's worse and some it's better. But unless somebody takes and breaks a cycle and doesn't attribute it to a family weakness, it can just go on and on for a long time. But a young child who's been the recipient of anger, and a parent can display that to their own children later on. Some of my thoughts are a little bit scattered today because I was actually studying for another topic and it didn't really come together very well, so I was working on two of them at the same time, and that doesn't work very well either always. But in a group, one thing that can be an upbuilding factor for a group, and it can be a counteract or a counterweight to anger. And that is the thing of respect. Respect is something that we can say is something that we earn. And there's a part of that we do earn. Respect is something that we can earn. But respect is also something that comes with a position to a degree. And some of that, let's say a dad has a certain level of respect just because he's dad. Mom has a certain level of respect just because she's mom. But that respect can be increased if we have a good dad, or if I'm a good dad, or I'm a good mom. That respect can be increased. But there's a respect for the position, and there's a respect for the action. And in there's a verse in, I didn't look it up here exactly, but it says, it's talking about somebody in a leadership or a parental position. We attribute it sometimes to church leaders, but it can be applied to parents. It can apply to anything in a leader position. But it says, let the elders that rule well be worthy of double honor. And I think that has the thought of respect for the position and earning respect for the action. And a person that I respect is someone that has more leeway, more grace, maybe, in my mind against becoming angry with that person. It's just the way we're wired. But a person I respect is somebody that has more grace, more tolerance. I have more tolerance for. Honor your father and mother is another commandment. And honor, in the New Testament, the word respect is not really used in a good way. Well, I say not in a good way. If you do a word search for respect, it doesn't really come back. The context is not the same as what we think of. It says God is no respecter of persons. It has the thought of partiality. But the thought that for respect is honor, the word honor. And the word honor has to do with value, placing value on someone. If we place value on someone, then that we have more tolerance with them. My wife, if I honor my wife, I place value on her. She's valuable to me. If I honor my brother or sister, they're valuable to me. And if we can place each other in value, build value and esteem, that's another way of saying building value or in our minds, then it creates, well, we first have to love, and then we esteem, I guess you could say it that way. But it's a counterweight for anger, or at least for conditions for being angry with each other. And a challenge I'd like to leave with us this week is to look for ways. Maybe it's just praying for somebody or even an action. But it can be something that we have to order in our own mind first. But to look for ways to value somebody that you might have a problem with. You can start with your own family. You may not have a problem with them, but esteem. Build up. That's another way of fulfilling the commandment. So when we talk about one jot or one tittle shall no wise pass away till all be fulfilled, It's taking the commandment that God gave to the in the Old Testament and taking the power that God, that we have with Christ and applying the same commandment on a higher level. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. I'd like to close by reading Ephesians 6. There's a, not the whole chapter, but Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 9. And that is a, if we can think of it as a mutual respect here in this chapter. It starts with children obeying your parents in the Lord. Honor your father and mother. Esteem them. Teenagers, or those of us that used to be teenagers, we understand how low we can esteem our parents sometimes. Do you know that your parents understand that too? They went through the same thing. We can understand that. But it also goes, fathers, provoke not your children. You can respect your children too, I can respect my children too. Not to shirk my parental responsibility. And then, I'm just going to read the 9 verses here and watch for the tone of mutual respect here. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, and singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven. Neither is there respect of persons with him. So the mutual respect, children, honor your parents. Fathers, don't provoke your children. Servants, serve your masters cheerfully. Masters, don't respect your servants and serve them cheerfully. Do the same things to them. It's mutual respect. And mutual respect goes a long way in a group, a church group, a brotherhood, in holding grudges out, forgiving grudges. And like as was mentioned earlier, the respect is, I'm going to say it's two parts. The first is that just the position that I have a brother here. There's a certain amount of respect for that. And double respect, or added to that respect, on how he fulfills that. There's an element of earned respect, but there's an element of automatic respect. May God bless each one of us this morning. Let's kneel for prayer.